Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to another edition of News You Can Use right here on WTIC News Talk 1080. I'm Ann Baldwin, the host of this program, and we're back at it again. It's another year, and it's another year for the Connecticut Science and Engineering Fair, which is going to be going on very, very shortly. And I'm thrilled to have Andy Bramante on with us today. Andy, thanks for being on the program.
Sure. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you. And thanks again, because we want to talk about this very exciting event. It's had its challenges due to COVID and things in the past. I think last year there was a weather issue. But before we get started, I want to mention to our listeners that you're on the advisory council for the Connecticut Science and Engineering Fair. And you're also the director of the Greenwich High School Independent Science Research Program. That's a big title, Andy.
It's impressive sounding.
It sounds impressive. So what does that mean?
I've been on the advisory council. I've been on the board for many years. You know, I've been basically, my background is I was a chemist for PerkinElmer and Hitachi for many years. And I got into teaching and started teaching this independent science course. Let's say it's been 18 years now. And so I started bringing kids to the fair, and you know, just from my vantage point, it's like, you know, what an incredible opportunity, because you've got kids basically conducting science that is so far advanced from what they're learning in school. So you're giving kids the opportunity to really learn in a very non-traditional way, execute projects, and then communicate it. And, you know, so my idea is great science is just great science until you communicate it. So this fair that I've been going to, you know, with my kids, it's been around for 76 years, but I've been involved with it for nearly 20, is an incredible opportunity where it brings together 400 students, you know, in the state. Over 100 schools are involved. It's, you know, involves 200 volunteers that basically judge and run this program. It gives away over $600,000 in awards to these kids. And for some, for the lucky few, they can move on to international competitions, where they get to really, these are life-changing opportunities for these kids. It's really less about the notoriety, at least from when I teach my kids. It's not about the money that you might make. It's really about the connections and the learning how to talk, how to defend, how to be creative, how to be imaginative, and then to basically take this passion that you have for your project and communicate that and get someone else excited.
So yeah. It's amazing. It's amazing. So how do they start? Where does the project start? Does it start in their home schools and then they take it to the fair, or how does this whole process begin?
Well, there are a variety of ways. You know, in some schools, you know, I mean, in my particular program, the kids basically originate it. They conduct it for the most part in the school, and then they execute it and then communicate it. There are some opportunities where kids can find themselves in labs over the summer, whether it be basically through a, you know, cold calling, if you will, or calling a bunch of scientists and getting someone excited about helping a student. That's another opportunity. There are summer internships, you know, that kids can apply to that can spin off into projects that they can certainly then move on and you know, put their own spin on it and take it to the fair. So there's a bunch of ways.
You know, one of the things that I've learned over the years in working with the Connecticut Science and Engineering Fair is that a lot of these projects from these kids, now let's keep in mind, these are kids that are in grades 7 to 12. Seventh grade to, you know, middle school to high school, right? And a lot of them take something that is a passion of theirs. Maybe they've had someone in their life that suffered from a disease. Maybe they've got, you know, there's some environmental issues that they are really concerned about. Talk a little bit about some of the aha moments in all the years that you've been involved with this, that you've just kind of, even with your background, you know, you shake your head and go, wow, this is amazing.
It's incredible. I mean, you're right. A lot of it stems from personal experience, personal interest. But I think the biggest part of, you know, when you say, well, they're kids, right? They're teenagers. You know, how can they be at this level? And, you know, I always, you know, people ask me all the time, well, how do your kids do these things? And, you know, to me, you know, as adults, we have, you know, we live on a road with guardrails. In terms, regardless of what our education is, we're very accustomed to what we what we know, and we think we've got it all figured out.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas these kids do not. They don't have that same outlook. You know, they basically are limitless in the way they think. You know, something that they would look at and say, well, that, you know, that seems pretty simple. An adult might not, you know. And so I think there's this different level of creativity and imagination that is not biased by, you know, many years of experience, whether it be in a job or, you know, through education. And that to me is the basis for how this all happens. You know, they get involved in a process that, you know, it has some early interest, you know, whether it be from home or personal experience, and then they really start to get sucked into it. They enjoy it, and they really are able to bounce off failures in ways that adults have a very difficult time doing. And I think that's a big part of it.
Well, and I like your analogy, Andy, I really do, that, you know, sometimes we do. We just stay in the guardrails. We take the curriculum. Yeah. We learn, you know, science, reading, math. But this takes them out of their comfort zone. And I've worked in public education professionally from a public relations standpoint for a long time. And, you know, I just I see it. When there's new programs and innovative programs like you provide, it sparks an interest early on that can take these people in places and these students in places that they probably never even imagined. And, you know, when you look at some of the categories, I mean, there's 11 categories. All right. So listeners, bear with me. But this is some this is some high-end stuff. We got biotech. We've got renewable energy, applied technology, computer science, engineering, environmental science, mathematics, sustainability, technical high schools, women in science and engineering, bioinformatics, which I don't even know what that is, and computational sciences. I mean, first of all, I'd have to get a dictionary or Google this stuff to find out what it even means.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty sophisticated. It really is.
So I'm going to go back to my question. Sure. Tell me about some of the projects where you have just seen amazing things. And I know there's a lot, so you're going to have to narrow it down.
Yeah, wow. This will be from personal experience, I guess.
Yes.
I mean, I had a student a few years ago as part of my teaching. I was teaching an ESL class, you know, and so
that's accelerated.
Right, as English as a second language.
Okay.
And so, you know, I've had a lot of high-flying students do amazing work, but this story comes to me very quickly. This fellow that was, he was in my chemistry class, which is taught in the same room as the research, one of the research classes. So they get all this different equipment all around them. And they, you know, at that particular point, I had a student that was working on a bee study where they, you know, this colony collapse disorder that most of us know about, where the bees started to disappear. Turns out it was primarily due to mites that would basically suck the fat bodies out of the, basically what we say is a liver. It would take fat bodies out of the bee and then they would get disoriented. They'd be more apt to be affected by bacteria, fungus, so forth and so on. So I had a student working on a way to create an entrance way that would basically strip the mites from the bees, you know, as they walked into their hive. And it was very exciting. She ended up patenting it. And that was incredible. But the story that I want to get to was this young man who was from Guatemala. He basically says to me, you know, my family owned a coffee farm, because he was a little older. Let's say he was 17 or 18 when he's supposed to be 16.
Okay.
And he says, you know, I was a coffee farmer before I got here, and there's this thing called rust, where basically the coffee plants are infected by a fungus that would wipe out the farm in one season. And he says to me, I want to fix that. I said, okay. So I'll make a long story very short. He started his research before he even enrolled in the research class. And in a year and a half, he ended up competing through the state fair. He was selected as a talents, what's called the Regeneron Science Talent Search, which is for seniors only, a very prestigious program. And he was picked as a finalist, which is 40 kids out of the top, all the kids in the country get picked for that. And he fixed it. He really did. You know, he created the solution to that problem. And it, you know, it just comes to me so quickly, because here's a student that lived out this problem, lost the family lost the business. And he came here and took full advantage of the education that he was getting and solved the problem.
Wow. And then took it back to Guatemala, I'm sure, and to other places that are in the same industry. Wow, that's amazing. And there really are so many goosebump moments. I mean, you know, if folks want to check out some of these projects and what some of these young people are working on, I really would encourage you to go to the website, which is ctsciencefair.org, and it really will blow your mind. And the other thing that is really, you know, you're a volunteer organization, right? And a lot of your judges come from the industries that that these kids are competing in. And there's so many different factors and so many different pieces of this that make this all come together. Talk a little bit about the caliber of the judges and where they come from that are looking at these students' projects.
Yeah, well, they're from all different walks of life within the technical, you know, the technological base that we have here in Connecticut. I mean, they're from companies like Alexion or Otis or Boehringer Ingelheim or Eversource, Pfizer. There's, you know, a long list, Stanley Black & Decker, we go on and on. But what we try to do, and what's great about having this, you know, incredible technological base, is we can then try to marry the students' projects and the, you know, the particular disciplines with these folks so that we really give the kids a great experience. It's really not, it's as much about them learning and really pushing forward this, you know, this interest that they have, more so, you know, or as much so or more so than winning a, you know, winning a medal, winning a ribbon, you know. And so it's an awesome, you know, environment to plug, you know, scientists in with students where they actually have commonality in what they're interested in.
Right. And I want to mention that it's the top 20% of these projects that will actually be entered into the competition, which is happening. The in-person judging happens on Wednesday, March 13th at Quinnipiac University. So you mentioned, too, there's cash prizes, there's scholarships, and then the top winners get invitations to the International Science and Engineering Fair, which takes place in Los Angeles in May. Mm-hmm. And you guys have seen a lot of your students make it there.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, no, it's been, I mean, every year the fair will send 7 projects to, you know, to ICEF is what it's commonly known as. Uh-huh. And, you know, and that is just an incredible, I mean, I've been fortunate enough to chaperone that trip many times.
They let you chaperone, Andy?
Yeah. you know, and it's, I got to be honest with you, it's an incredible experience because now you're, you know, you have students that are sitting there amongst the 1,200 most, you know, incredible, intelligent, creative students from the planet. And it, you know, and the experience, you know, that fair is organized so that the kids get to spend as much time with each other as they do, you know, competing in the fair. So they get to really make a lot of friendships, make a lot of connections. But, you know, selfishly, from my point of view, I get to coach these kids and you know, at that level where, whether they're my students or from some other school, you know, we really try our hardest to really put them in a position, you know, to do well, you know, and it's really, I go back to the, you know, the old adage, a great poster is just a great poster.
Right.
You know, you've got to be able to communicate it. And, you know, there's nothing like, you know, having a conversation with a student, going through it as a mentor, giving them ideas of what could be asked, and then having them come back to you and say, hey, by the way, that thing we talked about, they asked me about it and I was prepared, you know, and that's just, that's a fantastic experience for an adult.
Sure. And it's another skill set in itself, right? The presentation skills piece of this.
Oh, sure.
Like you said, you can put together, and chances are people standing in front of this project may not even understand what you're talking about. So,
how
do you kind of dumb it down and explain, you know, how this thought and how this project applies to maybe solving a problem, whether it's math or bioscience? And if we don't hear this every day, there's such a need for more kids to get into STEM, to get into, to get into these arenas. And like we also talked about, not all schools, if I'm not speaking out of hang on a second, not all schools have kind of the starter piece for this yet, right?
Yeah, no,
so you gotta go find it.
It's unusual, let's just leave it there. Yeah, it's right. I mean, you know, you have a few schools that see that, you know, that are wise enough to see what kind of, you know, just how creative, you know, there's this push in education for non-traditional let the student be the centerpiece of the learning experience. And I always look around and I say, well, there's no better example of that than what you do in an independent study, independent science research class in high school.
Right.
You know, because you're really the kid, kids driving the bus. I mean, that's the way it's supposed to be. And you're there to support them. And so they're basically taking, based on just curiosity, what they've maybe learned. You know, I've had kids that are at a biology first level science. Let's say they're freshmen and they're taking bio, but they're doing something in engineering. So they're really learning technologies that they probably have very little background in, and it's all because of this passion that they have, and it just grows and grows and grows. And so that, yeah, it's unfortunate, you know, back to your question, that there aren't more schools that do it.
Well, hopefully that will change. But, you know, and it's hard, too, because there's only so much time in the school day. Right.
And then there's
mandates. And I won't get political on this thing. But, you know, there's so much that's required that there's not a lot of, you know, spare time. Maybe you're in sports. Maybe you're in band. Maybe you're in other curricular activities. Mm-hmm. Well, you got to look at this stuff that way and find the time or find the resources where you can go and take your student and really encourage this, because it's just amazing. So you mentioned that, you know, the fair's been around for a while. This will be the 76th Connecticut Science and Engineering Fair. What's it going to look like at Quinnipiac when you have the final judges on the 13th? What does that look like?
Well, basically, the students are, the expectation is they bring a poster, you know, and so essentially they bring posters, supportive information, within reason, if they have widgets that they, you know, new inventions that are not, you know, that you can carry in your hand and not with two people, you know, they're allowed to bring that. And essentially what happens is you have judges walking around, usually in teams of two, three, some singular, depending on what they're judging, and they interview the kids, and the interviews can last, you know, typically about 15 minutes, where the, you know, the beginning part of it is the student gives their, you know, I don't want to say pitch. It's really more than a pitch. It's really they describe their work. They basically describe how they got into it, what the literature, you know, what has been done in the past that you are improving on. You know, what got you into this, and how are you taking what's current and making it better? And then you describe it, really touching on, you know, they're on the relevance of, okay, what you created, how is it that important, how does it make us better in terms of what we're, you know, the problem that we're solving. And then at that point, you know, the judges are given time to basically ask questions about things that maybe are confusing to them, things that they'd like to know in terms of how the student carried out the research. And that's basically what an interview looks like. So a student will get there at 8 o'clock in the morning and basically stand at their poster and have conversations like that over and over again until about 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
And that's exhausting. Standing on your feet and explaining.
Yeah, it's a long day.
Yeah. And I should also mention that prior to that final day, that there's virtual preliminary judging too.
Sure.
So not only do these students that get to that point of the final judging, they also have to present virtually, which is usually what, over Zoom or, you know, some sort of a format like that. So it gives them those presentation skills both online and then both in person.
Sure.
So how many of your students, or can you think of any students that have taken this foundation in all these different arenas and applied it? And because you've been there a long time, and now what are they doing today? How has this set?
I've had kids that, let's just start, you know, the skills that they learn are, you know, basically, you know, can be used in any profession. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had kids that have become medical doctors, engineers. I got a tour of the White House by one of my students that was in research. And now he's not any longer, but he was working for the National Security Council. And I always joked with him that I was a little frightened because I knew him when he was a teenager. So all walks of life, law, business, science, you know, this communication skill really transcends any career. But getting back to your question, I've had a lot of students that either went to college, put off college in lieu of starting their own businesses, you know. And so just a couple of weeks ago, I needed help for one of my current students on, you know, electrochemical measurements. And I remember that one of my students started his own work in renewable batteries, you know, and he has his own business. I don't know that he finished college, you know, so there's a lot of that where kids get, you know, into these little ideas and it launches into a small business and it works out, you know, and it's really kind of, it's cool to see, you
it
know,
is.
Because it, you know, you get a lot of kids that will come back and say, I want to, you know, whether you do, whatever you do in your life is your, you know, it's got to be your thing. But I have a lot of kids that will come back and, you know, every now and then say, yeah, I went into, you know, business. And I'm like, oh, that's too bad. It's fine.
It is fine. Trust me, it's fine. I have my own business that I wouldn't change it for the world.
Right,
I also want to mention, because this is, you know, an all-volunteer organization. The Connecticut Science and Engineering Expo is a nonprofit, and you couldn't do this without some major sponsors. So the beauty of the show is that it's a little bit longer than most interviews, but I want to call out some of your sponsors because I think it's important. And, you know, it's maybe somebody's listening that wants to get involved that is in, you know, some of these areas that we talked about to be a judge next year. Maybe there's a school or a student out there or grandparent listening that wants to get their kids involved in this. And you know, it's too late for this year, but there's always next year. So you really should look into it. So Alexion, PepsiCo, Stanley Black & Decker, which you already mentioned, one of my favorite charities, my favorite guys, Dr. William Pettit, the Pettit Family Foundation. Always behind, you know, science and engineering all the time. Jackson Labs, which is a perfect fit. Pfizer, Energize CT, and then Boehringer, which you also mentioned. So how important are these sponsorships to this event and to the success of it?
Well, I mean, frankly, we couldn't do it without them. You know, it really is that simple. You know, they basically fund, you know, all of the things that we do. You know, it's a volunteer organization, as you say, but in terms of what, you know, the awards and the, you know, the finances that, for example, take these students to the many different opportunities that they can certainly move towards, you know, that should they do well at the state fair. I mean, we send the kids to ICEF, for example. That's an all-expense-paid trip. There's something called the Genius Olympiad, which is another international affair. So these are all different things that, should the students win at the state fair, they basically are provided these opportunities. And all of that funding basically comes out of the, whether they're major category sponsors or even special category sponsors, most of which you mentioned.
So, and there's also scholarship opportunities, right?
Sure.
I know Quinnipiac, UHART, University of Hartford, and University of
UConn
New Haven.
As UConn. Well.
So some of these kids, if they do decide to go to college, then there's scholarship opportunities. And you know, talk about, you know, that is just such a great opportunity.
Oh, it's amazing.
Graduating from high school, knowing that you've got a scholarship to look forward, what a great feeling.
Yeah, no, I mean, that guy I mentioned that was working on that, the Beehive entranceway, she ended up getting that UConn will give out half scholarships often. And she won it twice at two different places, you know, at two different events. So she went there for free, you know, and there are a lot of kids that, I've had a few kids that have taken that opportunity, and it's amazing. I mean, if you think about the cost of education and what, you know, what we're, you know, what the fair is doing for these kids, it's just a fantastic, you know, opportunity, not only to really, you know, pursue their interest in the moment, but also to basically garner, you know, to gain an education at the same time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I know that, you know, it was 2 years ago, I think everything had to be virtual because of COVID, unfortunately. And then last year, we had a freak snowstorm in March, and that was another. But this year, it's going to be, the finals are going to be in person, and we're so looking forward to that again on March 13th at Quinnipiac University, just such a beautiful campus. And again, I want to encourage people to go to the website, check it out, ctsciencefair.org. And I, you know, hats off to you, Andy Bramante, and to your entire staff there, because you've already got full-time jobs. And I know these things sometimes can also, like you talked about, 50% scholarship at one event and the other. This is a full-time job in itself. You know, two halves make a whole, but you do it for the right reasons. And I really admire that perspective that you all have when it comes to making sure these kids get exposure to, you know, worldly things that they might not have the opportunity to experience.
Thank you. Thank you.
So what's your final message for us? I mean, you know, people out there, schools out there, how do they get involved? What does that process look like?
Well, I mean, contact us. I mean, we're looking for, first of all, we're looking for as much support as we can, you know, can get. So if you'd like to volunteer, whether that means be a judge during judging day, whether that means helping with any portion of what we do, setups, teardowns, you know, you name it. So any kind of sponsorships, if you're a school that's interested, certainly you could contact us. I mean, students can enter the fair independently, but also, you know, it's nice to have that school support, to have a teacher that sort of manages the, you know, the school participation. So we certainly would love to talk to you about that as well. You know, more schools, more students, more of everything, the better.
That's exactly right. Well, this was a great interview, Andy. Thank you so much. And we'll look forward to seeing the results and the winners and you know, learning about all the projects that come out of this thing. So we wish you a very successful 76th Connecticut Science and Engineering Fair this year.
Thank you so much.
All right. And thanks to all of you for tuning into this edition of News You Can Use. Again, I'm Ann Baldwin, and we'll talk to you again next weekend. Have a great day.